for somebody my age, you know, Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White were both tremendous, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame players. But, you know, if you'd taken Lawrence Taylor, he thrived in the 3-4 defense because he could line up anywhere and he could be a terror. And if you look at Reggie White, he thrived in the 4-3 because he could just bowl over anybody. If you put Reggie White in a 3-4, he wouldn't have been Reggie White. If you'd put Lawrence Taylor in a 4-3, he wouldn't have been Lawrence Taylor. So it's really important to take that talent. While you know, it's somebody who could do a bunch of different things, you got to line up that talent with the type of organization you're trying to build.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Bauberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with Mike Faulkner. Mike, how are we this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm excited. For anyone who hasn't listened to it, I can put it in the show notes. Mike was on Time Out with Leaders, another great podcast from Tyler White and Kevin Rustici from here in Rochester. So I want to shout it out because when I asked Tyler, hey, I'm looking for more guests, you're the first person. Mike was the first person that Tyler White recommended. So you can listen to that show. I want to tackle some topics that maybe weren't on that show, but I only mentioned that to say that Mike came at high recommendation, and you are the CEO and president of WECO Manufacturing. Tell me, let's just talk a little bit about what you do. We don't have to get into the nitty gritty on everything metal and fabrication, but what is WECO Manufacturing?
Thanks, Ben. And by the way, thanks for setting the bar like really, really low by saying that I was like the first name they recommended. So. So I guess I really have a lot to live up to. I got to thank those guys for that. So the WECO Manufacturing Group is a business that's come together buying smaller privately owned businesses where the owner didn't really have a succession plan, but finding a way to keep jobs in the community and disperse some growth by bringing together multiple different capabilities within the precision machining and metal fabrication industry. And really the way I like to look at it is we have one end-to-end capability under multiple roofs, and we're able to pass work back and forth. We're able to service our customers in a better way by offering a, you know, almost a one-stop shop. And we're on track to double year over year in wow, our size. So it's incredibly exciting. And a lot of that growth has come organically. So it's just been a fantastic ride. I've only been here for 9 months. So I started with a pretty good base, and I think I came in at just about the right time. So things really were starting to take off just as I came on board.
I want to hear a little bit about your story, Mike, because as we record this, it's the end of quarter four. This will come out at the start of quarter one. It'll be about a full year, a little less than a full year. So we'll talk about that year. But before that, what brought you into this role? I mean, it's a big deal when someone asks you to come in as the CEO, as someone who wasn't internal. Tell us a little bit about your history and how you earned this role.
Sure. So prior to coming to WECO, I spent the last 15 years at Garlock Sealing Technologies, where the last role that I had there, I was the president of Garlock. Garlock is part of a publicly traded company called Enpro Industries. And Garlock's quite a bit larger than WECO. Garlock was, you know, about $300 million, 1,150 employees. What did I have? 15 facilities in 11 different countries around the world. And When pandemic hit, I really had to evaluate where I was in my career, what I wanted to do next. One of the things that I discovered during pandemic, I'd been traveling for about 20 years and gone 50% of the time. And when I was home, I realized, you know what? I like being home. I like waking up in the same time zone every day. This is kind of nice. I've missed this.
Your body likes it.
My body loved it. You know, there's a lot of people who say that, you know, pandemic was terrible for their physical conditioning. I was like, boy, I'm eating right, I'm exercising regularly, and I get great sleep. This is the best thing that could have happened to me. No more airport food. But one of those things that really made me reevaluate and say, okay, what do I want to do next? And the president of Garlock role, it really wasn't running a business. I was really leading a portfolio of five different businesses. And I had people who were running the businesses and I was there to support them. But I really said, I miss running a business. I miss being in it day to day. I miss creating the strategy and you know, knowing the name of everybody who's on the shop floor and being able to go in and see and touch and make progress every day on the things that we're doing and making. And so I just started looking around and saying, okay, well, what's next for me then? If I don't want to do this anymore and I do want to run a business, what does that look like? And I happened to come across this opportunity. They were doing a nationwide search for this role, and just for luck for all of us, I guess, is the way it worked out. I just was here probably 15, 20 miles away from where they needed the job to be. So I had a just great interviews as I talked to Joe Cordozzi, who's the chairman of our board and was acting as kind of, you know, in addition to the 50 other things he was doing, he was the interim CEO of the business as well, while he was looking for somebody to step in and do the role, and just really hit it off with him right away. And the other thing that was interesting about this, Ben, is that growing up, my dad owned a machine shop. And once upon a time, he had wanted to pass on the machine shop to, you know, us kids. And us kids were off busy doing other things, creating our own way in the world. And so I think this is the universe's way of maybe giving me a second chance to run the machine shop my dad wanted me to long ago. So kind of nice. Every once in a while, these things come full circle.
And WECO, you guys are, where are you located again?
So we're just consolidating into three facilities. We had four. We had one in the city of Rochester that was undersized, just didn't give us the room to grow. So we made an acquisition in August of a business that was in Henrietta. And we moved our facility that was in Rochester. Part of the rationale for making that acquisition was we're going to have a better home with room to grow. So we're just in the process or final stages, probably about a month and a half away from being completely moved out of the old facility and having everything co-located into Henrietta. So we have one facility here that's got just about 100 employees. And this is all precision machining. We have another facility in Ontario, New York, just outside of Webster, that has a little over 100 employees. That is sheet metal fabrication. So we do laser cutting, die punch cutting, welding, paint, finish, and press break operations, where we'll bend pieces of metal into different shapes. And then we also have a precision machining facility, smaller, about 50 people, that's down around the Binghamton area in Endwell, New York. So that's where we're at right now. And again, still looking to try to find other pieces and capabilities that make sense to either build or try to acquire.
Yes. And I love it. So technically not large, I think, by some weird metric, but in my opinion, large company, multiple locations, you're a Rochester guy, they're looking for a fit nationally. You just end up being the perfect person for the role. Comes in handy for everybody, right? And I'm wondering, like, other than, I mean, you can give this answer, but I'm sure this isn't the answer. Other than a big fat paycheck, why did you decide to go with WECO? Like, I mean, you could have transitioned to a lot of different roles, I imagine. Why did you choose WECO?
You know what it was, Ben? There's a lot of things that can be done here. It's almost like starting with a. So there were three individual businesses or four individual businesses, but there's so much more that this could be. And seeing the potential when I came in, just some wonderful people that were there who really cared about their work, and trying to find a way to help unlock some opportunities and make one and one make three for some of those folks. That really appealed to me. And then also, I mean, one of the things that I'm really passionate about is trying to recreate a manufacturing footprint in the U.S. and in particular, trying to do that in upstate New York. It means a lot to me trying to create jobs here. So there was a lot more to it. As I get older and older, the money becomes less and less important. Sure. And really it's about, what do I want to do? What are the things that make me feel fulfilled at the end of the day? And when I looked at WECO, I said, this is a place where I can get a lot of fulfillment and enjoyment. I can create a lot of positive for people here in this role.
Fulfilling, enjoying, high growth opportunity right here in your city. I love it. And to my understanding, with all these employees and these multiple locations, you guys are hiring. You are looking for good talent, right?
We are definitely looking for talent, Ben. It's it's hard because everybody's looking for talent, you know. So we're trying to become an employer of choice. We're working very hard at that. So you know, one of the things that, you know, and I take a tremendous amount of joy in being able to do this. We came in and when they were a bunch of small companies, you know, they couldn't do things like good benefit plans, solid 401k programs. It was just things like that employees didn't get to realize. And now, you know, by having a little better size and scale, we're able to bring a solid 401k program where, you know, but before the match was, you know, took a long time to vest and wasn't very much. Now we're doing a 1-for-1 match up to 4%. We're increasing the amount of employer contributions towards the benefit program so that we are actually a little better than market in all cases. And we're also putting in things like individual development plans, regular monthly performance conversations, so that people understand what their goals are and you know, the leadership can understand, hey, what are the things you need in order to do your job more effectively? And really starting to get to know the people who are here so that we can be sure we've got the right people on the bus and that we've got them in the right seats. Mm-hmm. And understand where our gaps are, what we need to go out and hire. So right now, I think we went through it this morning. We have a Thursday staff meeting and we talk about our open positions. I think right now we've got about 18 positions that are open to hire. Really working hard to try to fill those.
Yeah. I like the common phrase these days are people before profit. And from my experience, not my experience, more that I just, a good friend of mine runs a recruiting company. And basically the story these days is the employees are calling the shots. The employees want different benefits and to be treated differently than they maybe did 20 years ago. And it's company like yours that are putting the employees first that will stand the test of time. I'll do this offline, but I want to make an introduction because my buddy does run a recruiting company and sure. Is always trying to set up skilled laborers with the right fit. And I just love that because, oh, it's funny because there was a day where, this is me just digressing all over the place, Mike, but there was a day when, you know, everyone was taught to go to school and get a specialized education because they'll get a job. And then a lot of those specialized jobs are oversaturated. And now there's a different kind of specialization, but the skilled trades people that are in super high demand. And I'm starting to think, if and when I have kids, I'm going to tell them, get into the trades because there's a place for you. They pay well and they have good benefits, right?
Absolutely. And from just kind of building off what you were talking about in terms of trying to become that employer of choice. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of and when I was at Garlock or you know I've got other people who've come in from other companies trying to measure employee engagement. The thing I keep trying to ask our employees to do, and we do this in a, you know, we have a town hall every month where just get up and, you know, kind of talk about the state of the union, how things are going, field questions from everybody there. But really the thing I keep asking them to do is I want you all to make this the place you'd want your kids to work.
And I love that.
If I look at it, you know, I always want something better for my kids. You were just talking about, hey, there's a great opportunity for you. Everybody wants better for their kids than they have for themselves. So if you could make the place where you'd want your kids to work, it's got to be a pretty special place. And that's one of those things that I measure employee engagement by. If you can help me bring about that change, if you can make this the kind of place that you'd want to bring a family member to, we got a pretty pretty good head start on how to be an employer of choice.
I love this.
And I also believe, and I did say this during the other podcast, but I'll say it. It's not mine. I learned it from a fellow by the name of Steve McAdam, who brought it to Enpro. I do believe in a dual bottom line company where we achieve a superior financial return by investing in our people, and the company who's got the most, the best, and the most engaged talent is going to win in the long haul. And so that's really what I'm trying to create, is a place where that talent wants to come.
Yes, good talent that's engaged. That's how you win. Now, in investing in your people, it's got to be more than just giving them benefits or paying them well. That's only a piece, right? I kind of want to get micro.
It's a tiny piece, Ben. The real thing is people want to feel like they've got a voice. People want to feel like they've got a career path. And they want to feel like they belong. You know, it's someplace where, you know, they're coming to work and they feel like they're part of a culture and something bigger than themselves. And so those are all the kind of things we're trying to put in, because anybody can pay more money, right? I mean, and that'll work for about 2 or 3 months, and then somebody will go, you know what, I got more money. It really honestly didn't change my life all that much. Benefits certainly help, because, you know, healthcare is a big concern everywhere. But again, it's not a way to really differentiate yourself across the entire scope of companies. And you might do better than some, but at the end of the day, somebody else can do that. But trying to make the place where they feel connected, that's where you can differentiate yourself. That's where you can be special.
If everyone feels connected, I love this, because I mean, I run a marketing company, and a big thing I teach is that your best salesperson, your best marketer is your clients. It is your staff. Like, if your clients are your cheerleaders, you're going to grow that company. If your employees are happy and engaged, they're going to talk about you. They're going to want to bring their families in. It's going to grow. And a lot of these concepts are 5,000 feet in the sky. And I feel like people understand that they need their employees to be happy and engaged. Can we get micro and talk a little bit about how that happens? Like, on a day-to-day, like, what programs or what benefits on a day-to-day is happening between leadership and the employees or the team members together? What does the day-to-day look like in that regard?
So I'll give you a great example from today. We have, you know, the unfortunate situation of having a quality issue with a part that goes to our best customer. And it was a condition that we were just made aware of this week. And so we pulled full stop. We've got finished goods inventory of this on the shelf. The customer needs the product. And these are all, like, you know, regular everyday business problems. But hey, we just came up with a quality alert. Let's pull together a cross-functional team from across the shop floor, because we can't inspect quality in. But let's make sure that somebody from every area that's going to touch this part has a chance to kind of look at this and help us with inspection, help us get to root cause, help us suggest actions to cure this problem. And we went from Tuesday afternoon realizing that we had this issue to yesterday bringing in, you know, a handful of people from both the office and the shop floor to just kind of come in and start being able to measure, inspect, and sort parts. To today, as I was leaving the building on my way over here, having a couple of people collaborating on a way to fix the problem and understanding, hey, we didn't know this was going on, but we found this. So here's the way we can fix it in the short term. Here's the long-term engineering change we have to make in order to make this thing work in the long run. And as I'm walking away, the fellow Dana, who was, you know, kind of leading the charge on this work, said, this is the kind of stuff I love to do. These are the kind of problems I love to solve. And that's how it's presenting somebody with something new, challenging, and exciting every day, and not just asking them to come in and put in their eight. You know, it's getting them actively involved in, hey, here's our issue. How can you help us?
You get them actively involved on the day-to-day. You have them solving problems. It sounds like you guys have long-term goals. But by attacking these short-term problems and giving good service, you reach those long-term.
Well, so the those long-term goals. I mean, you were talking about, you know, engaged employees and happy customers. I mean, our the four stakeholders in our strategic plan, because we run a balanced scorecard. and this is in order. It's customers, it's employees, it's investors, and it's community. And there's nothing, you know, it doesn't, because community came to last doesn't mean community is not important. There are four major stakeholders.
Yeah.
But the way I look at it is, if we have raving fans for customers, if we have engaged employees, we're going to have thrilled investors, and we're going to be doing good in the community because we're going to be a source of growth. And it all starts by that very simple, okay, well, here's a problem we've got. Our best customer has an issue with us. How are we going to solve this? We as a team collectively need to. We are equally responsible for the outcome. How do we go about fixing this problem? And hey, who wants to help? Mm. And when you ask people, hey, who wants to help? Instead of saying, hey, you got to do it this way instead. You did a bad job or something like that, because that's not what we want to do. We acknowledge that we're all human beings, and that we are prone to mistakes. We do get tired, all that kind of stuff. This was actually just a problem in the way that we were trying to put it together. We did what we thought was right, but then we found we had a little bit of a problem. The good news is we've identified what that problem is. We're able to fix it and move on.
Identify it. Ask who wants to help. I love that, Mike. I'm thinking to myself, because my girlfriend's in a director of credit role. She's in a leadership role, and to her almost detriment, she just does everything. She's gotten really good these days that when someone comes to her with something, she'll ask a question like, what would you do? Because at some point, you got to empower the person to tackle it themselves, and then basically grow people to be just as good, if not better than you, right?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it, Ben. So if management is providing this magic solution to everything, which, by the way, they aren't close enough to the problem to be able to really understand what the issue is. But if they're doing it, nobody learns anything. All they learn is, they told me to do this, so I'm going to do it. Instead, I like to have the people who are closest to the work help, engage and bring forward the solution. And when you do that, when you empower people and you give them the tools and the training and the opportunity to make the decision that impacts their work, great things happen. And then leadership learns, and the leadership team develops not by doing the work, but by developing the team to do the work. That creates this great virtuous cycle where you just create more and more capability. People feel more and more like they're part of the company. They own the outcome just as much as everybody else does. And your managers are free to go out and do the things that only they can do. I'm free to go about and do all the things I can do. I'll be honest with you. I was out pulling parts this morning too, just because I was curious and I wanted to see what was going on.
Yeah.
But again, when I'm doing that, I'm doing that from a place of listening and learning, not from a place of, well, you need to do this. So it's just one of these things where I always look at it. I'm the most expensive resource WECO has. What's the best use of my time? And it's probably not trying to tell somebody who knows way more about how to do their job than I do how to do their job.
First time ever, Mike, I think I need to transcribe this podcast, because so many gold nuggets here. That what stood out to me was leadership learns. I kind of want that on the back of a t-shirt, leadership learns. I just think it's a great motto, that a leaders are learners. And you talked about this a little bit in Kevin and Tyler's podcast, Time Out with Leaders, but I want you to dive into it again. And we can kind of walk through a timeline into how things are now, but I loved when you were talking about when you started at WECO. Explain the first week, 2 weeks to a month at WECO. Then later on, I kind of want to see how your leadership styles maybe changed, or just how things could be different today, or maybe they're exactly the same as when you started.
So every time I've taken on a new role, I come in and I make sure that I'm firmly grounded in the idea that I know nothing. and in some jobs that's been harder, because in some jobs I've been around that business, or in some cases, like, hey, I used to do that guy's job and now I'm his boss, and I know something about it. But whatever yes. it is, I try to suspend what I think I know and come in knowing nothing. With WECO, it was really easy. I didn't know anything. So it was really simple for me to let go of anything I thought I knew, because I knew I didn't know anything. And so really what I did in the first 30 days, and I told myself I was going to do this, I'm not going to make any decisions in the first 30 days. I'm going to listen. I'm not going to be, you know, at all directive. I try not to be directive. That's not, you know, I can do that as my leadership style if I need to. It's not something I generally like to do. It's not my best way to do it. So I really just did, you know, try to participate, listen, you know, it was like drinking from a fire hose for a while. There was lots of new things coming at me, but by doing that, I think it did a couple things. Number one, it gave me some credibility with the management team that was there that, okay, well, this isn't some genius who's just coming in to tell me what to do, who doesn't know anything. The other thing is I just did learn a tremendous amount about the business, and I learned what we were really good at and also what we weren't really good at. And the second one is key, because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble if you're pursuing the wrong type of work. And so by really saying, you know what, this is not in our wheelhouse, that's something that maybe we have to have access to, but we don't need to own that capability. Let's focus over here. Let's focus on the things that we do really, really well. Let's find other people who would value that. And let's find a way to get better at what we're already really good at. Let's go from good to great.
Yeah, get better at the good stuff, man. Get better at what you're good at rather than focusing on all your flaws.
I had somebody tell me a long time ago, there was I've had the benefit of having a coach for a number of years. And when I first met the company that was doing the coaching for Enpro, they gave this personality test, and there was these, you know, it was called the 16 PF, and there was like 16 different things that they rated you on. And it was, you know, things like, you know, compassionate versus hard-nosed and yes. organized versus chaos and all this kind of stuff. And the person who was doing the assessment said, you know, in terms of like the need for organization, she goes, it's a 1 to 16 scale. She goes, where 1 is needs to be super highly organized and 16 is completely comfortable in chaos. She goes, you are almost off the completely comfortable in chaos scale. You have no need for formalized organization. I said, you know, Marie, that's the funny thing. I keep getting, you know, people in my review. I have this boss and he keeps saying, well, you need to be more organized. You need this, you need that. And I go, just drives me nuts. And she goes, yeah, let me tell you something. Just stop that. I said, what? She goes, yeah, don't bother. She goes, you could put all your time and energy into trying to be more organized. It's not the best you're going to do is go from being really, really, really bad at it to just really bad at it. Why don't you focus on the things you're really good at? Focus on your strengths. And you know, there's all kinds of stuff that's come out lately with strengths-based leadership and things like that. But it was really freeing for me because my whole life people had been telling me, well, this one thing you're not good at, get better at it. She was like, nah, you're never going to be good at that. Forget it. You know, go do this. It was freeing, and it was a wonderful thing that helped me to develop what I was already pretty good at to turn it into something I was really good at.
Be really good at it. I'm thinking to myself, Mike, I'm imagining a football team. Because I just noticed this the other day, and I mean, I noticed it, but I like, for some reason, was just really in tune with it. Everyone from the person running on the field grabbing the towel when it falls out of a pocket to there's 30 seconds between the play. Someone runs off field. There's already someone squirting a water bottle in their mouth. Everybody's in the right spot. All the cameras are in the right spot. Everything is working in unison because everyone's doing their role at total perfection. And as you're talking about how everyone needs to be honing their strengths, I'm just imagining if you were to take just a random player, let's just say a center or a tight end or a quarterback or anybody, and say, you're the guy that picks up the towels or you're the guy that sprays the water into the person's mouth. Could they do it if they learned that role? Maybe. But that's a better role for someone who's 15 and maybe a child of someone on the team because they're the quarterback. They have that leadership role. That's their strength. If it was their job to teach the defense how to do their job, you wouldn't want the quarterback in that role. So I'm just thinking to myself that that's what you're doing. You're horning, you're basically the quarterback in this scenario. You're that leadership role. But what are you without all these team members honing their strengths, working together to kick butt and basically win a Super Bowl. So
that's exactly it. You know, it's Eli Manning. I don't know if you've watched any of the, the Manning brothers doing the Monday Night Football.
I haven't
podcast,
yet, but you know what? They're hilarious. So I probably should.
It's well worth it because they're great. But one of the things that Eli said a couple of weeks ago is, hey, let's be clear. I wasn't a football player. I was a quarterback. I don't know how to tackle anybody. I don't know how to block. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I know how to be quarterback and throw the pass. And that's all I know how to do. That's all I've ever known how to do. But you're absolutely right. You got to rely on all those team members. You know, somebody's got to block. Somebody's got to play defense. Somebody's got to run the ball. Somebody's got to, be the coach. And somebody's got to be the trainer to come in to make sure that people have the right strength and conditioning. And all of that is what it takes to make a winning team.
100%. And I'm going to laugh over it the rest of my life. Just the image of the guy holding the bottle, shooting the water about 3 to 5 feet into the guy's mouth with perfect precision. I'm like, that's a talent in itself. But now that we're kind of just goofing, let's get to know you a little bit better. I mean, when you take the suit, you're not wearing a suit and tie now, so you don't seem like you have to wear a suit and tie.
I haven't had to wear one in years, Ben. It's really good. When I first started out, I had to wear one. I started my first job out of college was at Kodak, and it was a suit and tie type thing. Thank God I don't have to do that anymore.
I was going to say, when you take the suit and tie off, it can be when you take the polo off or just when you're just relaxing and you've got nothing in the world to do, nothing in the world to focus on. What are you doing for fun?
It depends on who's around me. So if I'm all alone, like some of my favorite times are first thing in the morning when I've just got a cup of coffee, the rest of the house is asleep. I like to read. Really just enjoy sitting down, reading a little bit. I love to run. I'm one of those strange people who actually does love to run. I know there's a lot of people who run and go, I hate it. I enjoy it. It's where I get my best ideas. It's where I get a lot of recharge. Love spending time with my family. I had the pleasure yesterday of being able to take my daughter on her first med school interview. And I was telling my wife, I got to spend about 2 hours in the car with her on the way up, 2 hours in the car with her on the way back. And I got to take her to dinner. And I said, you know what? Five hours one-on-one time with my 21-year-old daughter is a wonderful thing to have. Doesn't happen very often. But those are the kind of things that give me quite a bit of energy.
Yeah, you're going to miss her, right? But it's all worth it.
Yeah. It's... fortunately, I still have a 16-year-old at home who I get to spend time with, and I'm going to miss her too when she's gone. But it's nice to have these moments where they actually want to spend time with you.
Two daughters.
Yes.
How'd you look out?
I don't know. But I used to have a full head of hair, and the hair that I had was darker colored when they came along. So, they're responsible for this.
I love
it. They're very good kids. I did get lucky.
I believe it. And you look great. I mean, you're talking to someone who's 30 years old, and I've got that big old bald spot that I inherited from my family. It was I'd sit at dinner tables when I was 16, 17, and I had an afro. And all the men in the family, Jewish family, all the men in the family would give me dirty looks because everybody's bald. And I'm just like the kid with the afro. So I'm with you, man. It goes away sometimes.
It goes on you fast.
The beard grows on me fast. The hair goes on me fast. So let's just bring this up one more time, because I think it's badass and great that you guys are hiring here in the community. How does someone who's listening, or maybe they might know somebody, who should we be looking for? Like, who's a good fit for the company? Is it a personality type? Is it an experience level? Is it a certain role? Well, what and who is a good fit for WECO?
So, and that's a fantastic question, Ben. We've got a wide variety of positions that are open. We're looking for skilled machinists, press brake operators, people that want to work in finishing and powder coating. Those are kind of the skilled positions that we've got that are out there. Although we'll take people and train them, because we're, if somebody wants to be involved in manufacturing, we're more than happy to bring them in and see what fits them best. We're looking for engineers, you know, people not just on the manufacturing engineering side or the, you know, CAD side of things, but also on the quality engineering side of things. Our value proposition is that of customer intimacy. So we really are trying to bolster our customers. You know, I hate even calling it customer service. I want to call it customer care. I think the whole company is responsible for customer service. It's not a department. It's a state of being. But I want to bring in some customer care professionals who can help take care of our best customers and proactively communicate. And those are some of the bigger areas that we're looking at. In terms of what fits, I always ask myself four questions when I'm trying to find somebody for a role. And if I can get four unequivocal yeses, then that person should get hired. And the first question is, do they want this job? So there's a lot of people who are like, well, I want to come in, but I really want to do that. Okay, I get it. But do you want to do this one? Because in order to get opportunities that are further down the road, you're going to have to really, you know, immerse yourself and become somebody who's good at this job. Mm. Can they do the next job? So there's lots of people, I want that one. Okay, can you do the next one? You know, how much does it take to get you on that runway and keep you up and rolling? Do you want to do this job, you know, this first one, because it's good to have runway and it's good to be able to do this, but you know, is this the one you want to do? Mm-hmm. And then finally, do they fit? And kind of my definition for the do they fit is, would I willingly, you know, bring this person out with a bunch of us and go to lunch, and would we enjoy the experience? Because really, in order to do that fit part, I think somebody's got to come in and they have to want to be a teacher and a learner. So, you know, I want to help share what I know so I can make all the rest of us better. And at the same time, I want to learn from others so I can become better and I can become more capable. So just to run down, can they do this job? Do they want to do this job? Do they have runway? Do they fit? And if I get four yeses, that's the kind of person I want to hire. That's probably not the normal kind of thing that you hear. Yeah. And what are you looking for? But, and it might be a little bit subjective, but those are the things that I'm looking for in an individual coming into interview.
Oh, I love this. I mean, you've got the first three are massively important, but then do they fit? To my understanding, you guys don't have to be buddy-buddy where you'd go out and have a beer, but is there respect? Is there mutual respect? Is there mutual, is it a partnership versus,
If you've got somebody who can't respectfully communicate back and forth and doesn't want to share ideas and doesn't want to bring other ideas and, you know, bring different perspectives into the room, that's probably not the right individual. You know, there's a lot of smart people out there, but you know, we're looking for somebody who has intelligence and emotional intelligence and, you know, wants to truly be part of the team and doesn't want to do it all themselves. Mm.
I worked for a company in the past, not going to name them, but I was on the sales team and we were kick butt. We were really good, but there was one person who was top three in the room always. Very good salesperson, very greedy, very emotionally detached, and very selfish and just, it was toxic to the environment. But, oh, it's bringing in revenue for the company, right? When that person transitioned out of that role, out of that company, the sales numbers dipped very, very, very slightly, and then they shot up. And we were one less person who's in our top three gone, but since it wasn't a good fit, and granted, they're incredible, this isn't calling anybody out, since they weren't a good fit for this team, boom, the entire team worked better when we found someone who was a better fit. So I've experienced that on my end as well.
Yeah, and it's, you know, different cultures, there's people who they might not want to work in the kind of culture we're trying to create here. They might want to have I want to be the star player. I want to control everything. I want everything to come through me. This probably isn't going to be the place where they're going to thrive.
Fair enough.
I use the, you know, going back to a football analogy, and it's funny.
Please.
This is how I knew this was a great spot. When I was doing the interview, I was sharing this story with with my now boss, and he was like picking right up on it. For somebody my age, you know, Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White were both tremendous, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame players. But, you know, if you'd taken Lawrence Taylor, he thrived in the 3-4 defense because he could line up anywhere and he could be a terror. And if you look at Reggie White, he thrived in the 4-3 because he could just bowl over anybody. If you put Reggie White in a 3-4, he wouldn't have been Reggie White. If you'd put Lawrence Taylor in a 4-3, he wouldn't have been Lawrence Taylor. So it's really important to take that talent while you know, it's somebody who could do a bunch of different things. You got to line up that talent with the type of organization you're trying to build.
I want to leave it at that. I want to go rapid fire. It's been so valuable. I wish I could have another 45 minutes with you. Rapid fire is just short, sweet questions to end on a high note and get to know Mike a little bit better. No wrong answers. So feel free to just ignore the question or fill in the blank.
Okay. Just in fairness, Ben, I don't know if you've noticed, but you know, I have a hard time answering any question concisely. So just fair warning.
I'm the exact same way. The exact same way. Usually I'm the one who derails the rapid fire round. I'm asking five questions and I bring it in, but I'm derailing it right now. So we'll go into coffee or tea.
Oh, coffee. Tea is sadness in a cup. Who would want to drink that?
Why do you say that?
It just is, you know, it's like, you know, tastes terrible. It's just, you know, it's no. Next question. Come on. Rapid fire, Ben. Rapid fire.
Beer or wine?
Oh, beer. Good beer. IPA. I'm an IPA fan. Although if it's a really good red wine, I might do that, but 99 times out of 100 beer.
Have you ever heard of Treehouse Brewery?
I have. Yeah.
I've got a couple for you. I just was in for anyone who doesn't know, it's over in Boston, Mass, one of the most famous New England IPAs. I obviously bought 72 of them, so I got a four-pack. I've got a four-pack for you. So next questions. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite season?
Summer. No doubt summer. I'm tired of cold weather already. You know, it's already wearing on me, Ben.
Oh man, yeah, that Bills game. Did you see the Bills Patriots?
I was there. I actually was in a box, so I wasn't standing up. We tailgated outside for a short period of time until we found an establishment that would let us inside. But it was nasty. It was tough.
11 p.m. in a windstorm. Let's have a football game. Favorite band.
Ooh, boy.
Or top three.
That is a tough one. So I'm going to say Elvis Costello and the Attractions are probably an all-time top. I listen to a fair amount of Vampire Weekend. My daughter got me hooked on that a few years ago. Okay. They are, you know, there's a mix. And then I'm going to go way back. There's a band very early in the punk movement called the Jam. They were awesome as well. So those are probably three that interweave through my iPod over and over again. It's actually my phone. I don't have an iPod anymore, but you know what I mean.
iPhone rather. Yeah. I look up the Jam, never heard of them. We'll do one more. And cause I know you're a sports guy. Do you have a favorite player, a favorite team, a favorite anything in the sports world? Or are you just basically a bandwagoner?
Well, I'm not a bandwagoner. I am a diehard Red Sox fan,
yes,
and a diehard Giants fan. So for most of my life, I built a lot of character because character is what you get when you don't get what you want. And they lost a lot when I was growing up. So as a favorite player, he's now recently retired, but I always loved Big Papi for the Red Sox. He's just fantastic to watch. He brought so much joy to the game, you know, is really what it was. It was just fun to watch him play.
Mike, you're awesome. Thank you for spending your time with me and the audience. They know to look in the show notes, but in case they need a reminder, it'll be in the show notes. But tell me, how do people get in touch with WECO, whether it's they're a company that can utilize your service, they know someone who's looking for a job, or they just think Mike's a kick-butt person and they want to connect and meet him? Well, what's the best way to reach out?
So check us out on our website. let me make sure I got this right as I'm doing this, because you know I don't have to type this in a whole lot.
I don't think I know a single website name. I just Google the keywords usually.
So it's you might have to edit this part out because I should probably know this, but so it's, I believe it's wicomfg.com. So, but Google isn't helping me out here.
All right. I'm just sitting here watching you. I should have helped you.
That's okay. That's
Wico,
that you're perfect.
Wicomfg.com.
It is wicomfg.com.
And what is that precision machine here? It's drilling some holes. That's cool. Looks like you got something fabricating right on the top of the screen.
We do. We're showing all of our cool capabilities. So, yeah, that's awesome. That's how you can reach out and find the company. And I'm sorry it took me so long to get there. I usually don't have to type it in. So,
for what it's worth, if you're okay leaving it in, I think we should, because we gave the listener time to actually look it up for us. I'm the kind of guy, I mean, if I'm driving, I'm not going to do it. But if we're trying to figure it out and I'm listening, I'm like, oh, I can figure it out, as if, I mean, the listener can't hear us, but you never know.
Ben, I'm pulling him in, trying to help. So that's great. I love it. It's perfect. Leave it.
If I needed a job, I'd come work with you. I don't.
Well, thank anyone, you. That's high praise.
Anyone who's, a lot of my listeners are incredibly successful, but they know people, they have children, they have friends. Sounds like you guys are bringing people on, and I'd love to work with a leader like you. Thanks again, Mike, for coming on the show. I think it's been a ball.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I really had a good time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.